Continuing in our series of discussions on guru issues. In many of these talks, I'm not offering definitive answers, but I'm simply discussing the issues, making some suggestions, as they're issues that we in this worldwide Krishna consciousness movement live with in our personal lives. We have to deal with them. Today I'm going to talk about gurus as managers, because obviously in a big worldwide movement, management is required. Srila Prabhupada himself was very much aware of that, and he set up the management systems, and he was very much tuned into it. So it isn't that management in and of itself is something material. Rather, Srila Prabhupada, he rejected that idea. He said that management is archana. It's just like deity worship. Apart from the worldwide management, the high-level management of ISKCON, every little center requires management, every little traveling Sankirtan party. I used to go out in groups of just three of us or four of us. We'd go out for a considerable period, and someone has to be in charge. It requires some management, procurement of books, keeping the money which comes in properly so it doesn't get stolen, organizing the men, dealing with problems that inevitably arise. Management is required. However, management, by its very nature, especially in this Kali Yuga, leads to discontent among some of those who are managed, or some of those who are trying to be co-managers. And it can be seen as political, a political service. I was surprised when, in the course of discussion, one of the leading disciples of a major guru here in ISKCON, in India, major means he has many disciples, referred matter-of-factly, as if it was just accepted by everyone, that guruship is a political post. Politics and management go hand in hand. And especially if gurus are involved in the day-to-day nitty-gritty management issues of ISKCON, they can bring a lot of clout as gurus to push through the agenda that they wish to be pushed through, which is maybe not very pleasing to others who don't agree with that agenda or don't agree with that way of doing things. Anyway, this leading disciple who I'm referring to, he had been in the corporate world before he became a full-time devotee in ISKCON. He knew about office politics, and I've spoken to devotees who have been in the corporate world and have moved into the management world of ISKCON, and commented that, well, it's pretty much the same kind of thing. Office politics, corporate politics, a lot of the same kind of thing goes on. So in this talk, I want to make a case for the role and the service of being a manager, management and guruship. In general, they don't mix very well. Srila Prabhupada did it. He was managing ISKCON, he was involved in it. He didn't want to be. From very early on, from 1970, he wanted to be relieved. He set up the GBC with the idea that the GBC would relieve him from management issues so that he could just concentrate on, specifically and most importantly, on translating his books. And yeah, and preaching also, personal preaching, but especially for translating his books. And again, throughout the remaining 7 years or so that Srila Prabhupada remained with us, he again and again requested the GBC to relieve him from management. So he didn't want to do it, but he just felt he had to, because he wasn't satisfied in many cases with the competence or the decisions of those he had entrusted management to. But anyway, we can understand from this that it's not an absolute principle that gurus mustn't manage, and to some extent, it's unavoidable. Srila Prabhupada said that management follows preaching like a shadow. That's it. I want to find that quote. I'll just make a little note for myself. I do remember it. I'm going to try and find it. Management follows preaching like a shadow. In other words, it's unavoidable. It will be there. The real thing is the preaching, but the management has to follow. As a general observation, management, both in the secular world and in the spiritual organization, or the spiritually orientated organization, that is ISKCON, and there are so many other Vaishnava and religious organizations, it can bring out the worst. Commonly accepted maxim that power corrupts. Of course, power only corrupts if the seed of corruption is within the heart. We don't see that power corrupted Srila Prabhupada. But as a general maxim, it is stated that power corrupts. Maybe it's our jaundiced vision that we tend to see the mistakes of those in management positions, especially because when you are in a position of authority, your mistakes can be very big mistakes. If you don't have a very large area of jurisdiction, then your mistakes, they may tend just to affect you and a few others. But if you're overseeing many, many people, then your mistakes will tend to adversely affect many, many people, and you don't be. And there's going to be some complaining. Management can bring out the best in those who are very competent to do it. We might not even notice very much devotees who have been patiently and quietly overseeing projects for many years. There are devotees who have been managing in temples, zones, for years and years and years and years. And sure, everyone makes some kind of mistake, but even to stick it out is quite an achievement. Management is not easy. Management in Krishna consciousness. It's relatively easier in the secular world, where the bottom line is, do what I say or you don't have a job. But in Krishna consciousness, we have to inspire others to serve. And we're looking for a very high level of service, of surrender with nothing reserved, no personal desire, no nothing. So really, to manage in Krishna consciousness, the way to do it is by inspiration, by one's own personal example. But even then, Srila Prabhupada was, of course, the best personal example, and it's not that everyone lived up to his expectations or hopes. Management problems are perennial. There was a magazine published from New Vrindavan from maybe the early 70s. It was called Brijabasi Spirit, and it was a popular magazine throughout ISKCON. It got circulated beyond New Vrindavan. Anyway, in 1975, the editor of the Brijabasi Spirit interviewed Nitai Das, who was traveling with Srila Prabhupada as Srila Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor. So naturally, he got to hear many of the things that Srila Prabhupada said privately and was privy to many of Srila Prabhupada's personal observations about this movement and about so many other things. Now, Nitai Das, his departure from Srila Prabhupada's movement was inglorious, no doubt. But at the time, he was in good standing, and there's no reason to doubt his observations. So it's quite instructive, in as much as we see that management problems are perennial. He openly said that, according to what he had understood from hearing Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada saw that some of his leading disciples were not spiritually so much qualified for leadership positions, but he kept them in the position because you need someone to do the job, and not everyone can manage. You can have someone very pure. In our movement, we know of some very pure devotees, just like Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu, who lived in ISKCON Vrindavan for years, is recognized as a great saintly devotee. He had nothing like, not a cell in his body was attuned to management. He was a cook. So that's an example. So Srila Prabhupada, his hope from what Nitai said was that they'll become purified by going on practicing Krishna consciousness. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized so much that again and again and again, that all the devotees must rise early, chant their rounds, go on sankirtan, study the books, hear the classes. And the leaders in this must be the temple leaders and the GBCs, which led Satsarup Maharaj to paraphrase this, that leader in Krishna consciousness means leader in hearing and chanting. Now, I'm speaking in a general way here about management, and I'll get back to the point about gurus a little later. So in the Brijabasi Spirit, it was reported that a devotee had said to Nitai, some devotees in positions of authority think that they're absolutely right, and that others, if they don't agree with me, are wrong. Things have to be done my way, not fully taking into consideration Prabhupada's instructions and not having spiritual broad-mindedness. Nitai Das replied, his observation it was at that time, and it could be seen now in some cases also. Nitai said that, well, the difficulty is that we're all in the neophyte stage, and the more we get some power or authority, the tendency is to become motivated by self-interest. It's just a symptom of not being advanced in spiritual consciousness. So then the question came to Nitai, well, what do we do? We are neophytes, we're under the managers. How do we cope with a manager who is, what's being hinted at is egotistical, and maybe doesn't have our best interests at heart. Well, Nittai said, well, the opportunity is there for everyone to be Krishna conscious. It's not, however the manager above you acts, he's engaging you in Krishna's service. And in our society, no one's going to tell you to eat meat, drink alcohol, or any such things. They'll tell you, you have to chant your rounds and so on. So then the question comes up, but if someone's not qualified for a management position, why is he put in that position? Nittai replied, well, in many cases, there's no one else to do it. Someone has to manage. Srila Prabhupada can't manage all of this by himself. I remember the same question was put to Sahotra Swami when he was GBC in Poland, and there was some devotee who was a manager who in some ways was very efficient as a manager, but the devotees under him didn't like him. And it was brought to Sahotra Swami, and he said, well, who else is going to manage? Who's going to do it? And I've factually seen that in several cases, that devotees rise up against their temple president, have him removed, and afterwards, the whole situation just deflates. That the manager may have had so many faults in so many ways, but he was good at managing. And then when he leaves that position, then there's no one who can do half as good a job, and then the whole situation goes to hell. So in some ways, even if the manager was in so many ways not doing the job to the satisfaction of everyone, it was still better than what followed afterwards. So Nittai got the point. The man has to be a good manager, and at the same time, he has to be a strong devotee. Then Roma Harshan, who's interviewing, said, so if he's not a good manager, then he should just get kicked out. Isn't it? And I'm paraphrasing, of course. And Nittai said, no, Prabhupada never acts like that. He tries to train the person to manage. Prabhupada is not the kind who will shove someone out of a position. His idea is to try and train him to act in that position. He doesn't like to take a person out of a position, but he tries to reform him so that he's qualified. And from my study of Srila Prabhupada's dealings, which I've been studying in quite some detail over the last few years as I've been working on a major publication on Srila Prabhupada and his desires for his movement and how he interacted with devotees, that was very much Srila Prabhupada's modus operandi. Generally, he wouldn't throw anyone out. He would always try to reform them. Of course, if someone was seriously breaking the principles, then they could be removed. But often Srila Prabhupada would move the, especially if they were devotees who had put in a lot of very good service, Srila Prabhupada would move them from one position to another. He just wouldn't throw them out on the street. He appreciated the service they'd done. Now, these kinds of traits in gurus, where someone is my way or the highway, not a good manager in so many ways, but attached to doing that anyway. Obviously, we don't want that kind of thing in gurus. We want to look up to gurus as the ideal of our life. Not someone that we're engaged in managerial tangles with. Some of our gurus who are involved in management are definitely very dedicated, very hardworking, no gross sense gratification, no question of that. But at the same time, it is perceived, and I'm not just saying myself, I'm saying even disciples may note that there's something of a my way or the highway. I call the shots around here. I, me, mine mentality, my zone, my disciples. And although Srila Prabhupada was trying to get out of management so that he could concentrate on his translations, it seems that some even gurus who are very good devotees in so many ways, it seems they're also very attached to their management position, even if they're not actually very good managers in many ways, and they make wrong moves and wrong decisions which cause so many problems to their disciples and others. But you can't say that because they're gurus and senior devotees. Now, both management and guruship are difficult and demanding services. And they're hard to combine because management often involves dealing in a manner that might seem to be too strong, because you have to take decisions and not everyone's going to like the decision. And you have to be strong with it. You might be perceived as being partial because you make a decision and some party likes the decision, another party doesn't. So in these ways, management tends to make persons seem to be unsaintly. It's not being unsaintly to manage, but the very nature of the service. It's not that one is necessarily unsaintly because he's managing. Of course, if you're managing a slaughterhouse, that's something else, but we're talking about managing in Krishna consciousness. It is an important service to Krishna. And even our great acharyas, Jiva Goswami, was very much involved up in management. And the acquiring lands, getting legal documents, making provision for future, for the future legal status of the incipient Gauriya Vaishnava movement. He was very much involved in management. So it's not that is unsaintly to manage, but it's likely to be seen like that. Management by nature is often contentious. Managers have to make unpopular decisions sometimes. Just like in the secular world, sometimes the governments, they have to increase the taxes, which is unpopular, but if they don't do, then the very citizens who complain about the tax increase, if they don't do it, the government doesn't do it, then the citizens have to suffer insufficient health services, insufficient protection from the police, and so many things, which I've heard is the situation in Britain at the present time. People are complaining because of lack of sufficient policing and health services. So I'm just giving an example. And inevitably managers make mistakes, which, I've said already, affect others and are obvious to all, and they're blamed for that. And Definitely dealing in legalities, finances, disputes, property affairs are often misunderstood to be non-spiritual. And it's probably best not mixed with the role of a guru, because the role of a guru is basically Brahminical, and the role of a manager is more like that of a Kshatriya. Of course, even in Brahminical society, I gave the example of Jiva Goswami, among Brahmanas, traditionally there also have been managers, because when there are mats and properties of a temple, the Brahmanas have to oversee that. Although actually, in many cases, they might appoint others to do that. And the administrative class in Bengal, the Kayasthas, who became very prominent and powerful by becoming managers. Srila Prabhupada was able to manage and be the guru and looked up to all, because he was unquestioningly respected by almost all his disciples. Not in every case. There were some cases where disciples brought a dispute to Srila Prabhupada, and very few cases, and Srila Prabhupada, or took some contentious issue, and Srila Prabhupada, he dismissed those disciples, as he didn't like their attitude. I'm thinking of Kanupri and Jamadagni. But often, when there were disputes between Srila Prabhupada's disciples, he would address it by preaching to both parties and bringing out the Siddhanta, or the proper conclusion. Just like at one time there was a great dispute, as in America, where the movement, that was really the center of the movement at that time, or where it was really booming at the time. The town presidents were mostly grihasthas, but there were sannyasis and brahmacharis who were preaching that grihastha life is all maya. So the brahmacharis who were joining in the temples, the traveling, or the sannyasis and brahmacharis who had a traveling sankirtan party, the Radha Damodar party, they would preach that, you know, grihasthas, they're all fallen. Why are you serving under? Why are you going out and working hard, distributing books, making money to support these grihasthas who are just living a life of sense gratification? And naturally the grihastha presidents, who were working very hard and were very dedicated, weren't very happy with this, and the dispute came to Srila Prabhupada, who preached to both sides and said, but he took the view, or he preached that whatever ashram we're in, we're all serving Krishna. Grihasthas, they can also preach. It's not that they're condemned. And he said that in this age, no one can follow all the rules and regulations so strictly. So he did take the side of the grihasthas in this issue. But he did it by preaching, not they just... He dismissed Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was the leader of the Radha Damodar Sankirtan party. He did remove him from his post, but he gave him another bigger preaching challenge. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj himself was big enough, in not only in his position, but in his commitment to Srila Prabhupada, that he was able to take such a heavy chastisement, and he ran with it. And eventually his bigger engagement was to preach in China, which he eventually did. Another reason that Srila Prabhupada was able to manage and be the guru was not that he was unquestioningly accepted by all. Well, actually, some devotees, very few, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was one of them, was one who would actually argue with Srila Prabhupada sometimes over managerial issues and this and that, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj was maybe the heaviest person in our movement, but There's one who is heavier, Srila Prabhupada. Now, one other reason why Srila Prabhupada was able to combine both roles was that he was the sole and ultimate authority for everyone, which is not so in ISKCON today. So different gurus who are managing, and they have disagreements, and the disagreement can spread among the disciples also. Sometimes it's seen that gurus may seem more like CEOs than sadhus. They seem to be more enlivened by organization and management than Shravan and Kirtan. Like their real interest in life is the management. And they do their Shravan Kirtan, but they're not particularly. Anyway, it shouldn't be too judgmental, as they say. They seem to be more into getting things done, which is good. We want to get things done for Krishna. But they don't seem to have that much deep interest in philosophy, deeply studying, which are brahminical activities. And gurus are expected to be brahminical. So in this way, the gurus who are very much into management may be seen as not very spiritual personalities, and some who are in management are well known even by their disciples, because I've heard from the disciples, to lie and be deceitful and do politics, and then the disciples also lie and do politics with them. It's all very, I find it very distasteful and disturbing to practically have to deal with certain Vaishnavas in a manner that is political. They're definitely devotees, they have knowledge of the absolute truth, they're dedicated to Krishna consciousness, they know what's in the books, they chant Hare Krishna, they're dedicated to Srila Prabhupada's mission, but they don't deal straightforwardly, and that can be especially disturbing when they're looked up to as pure devotees. Being a guru can definitely help in management, because it's easier to say no to someone who's not your guru than to someone who is. But it can also compromise one's position as a guru, as I've been talking about, that even disciples may begin to doubt, or they may have to deal in such a way that they have to deal with their guru, and they feel they may have to, especially if the disciple is in a managerial position himself. I've heard this from devotees, that, well, I respect my guru as my guru, but in management matters, I have to deal with him as a manager, not as a guru. Otherwise, they don't like the gurus. They may not have the same vision or for their project. The guru and the disciple may not have the same vision or how to deal with certain situations, how to deal with certain disciples. I know myself, when in my days of management, I was very disturbed. Well, actually, I couldn't manage properly because my guru godbrother was angry at me because I wanted to throw out devotees who I knew were stealing, repeatedly stealing. He's telling me I'm envious of them, and eventually I threw them out anyway, and he wasn't happy. That'd be more difficult if you're a disciple. You've got devotees around you who you're being forced to keep in the position, and you know they're stealing, but the guru doesn't want to remove them. These are the kind of things that arise. And then it's hard if the disciple has to relate to a guru more in a managerial context than a spiritual context. Then your spiritual connection feels depleted. He's more my manager than my spiritual guide. And it can be that devotees are spiritually advanced, but managerially not so capable. But because of having that power, whatever, for whatever reason, they have that authority both as guru and as manager, and they become as if unquestionable, and then make big blunders, managerial blunders, which can cause serious long-standing problems. And then disciples, what are they supposed to do? Because they have a guru who thinks that he's a great manager, but he isn't, and he doesn't realize it. Yeah, it's common. Gurus, officially gurus, maybe someone who's a senior devotee, you can't say anything against them. They can't listen to anyone. It's a common problem, which actually Kundali, our godbrother, he was very much into this, but he was not appreciated for that, no doubt. But he emphasized the point that it's a huge and a hugely damaging mistake to presume that because a devotee is a spiritual leader or a manager, that they must be spiritually advanced. That the post automatically confers spiritual advancement. But simply being appointed to a post doesn't necessarily make one spiritually advanced. Another common mistake is to presume that because someone's in a leadership role, that they're qualified to advise in all kinds of areas, including health, just like the vaccination thing. So many devotees wanted to know, are you pro-vaccination or anti-vaccination? I don't want to talk about it because I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I don't know if the doctors know either, but it's not my field of expertise. Domestic affairs. So many devotees have domestic problems and they think the guru is supposed to be a marriage counselor or personal psychological problems. The guru's supposed to be some expert psychoanalyst or someone who you go to with all your mental, psychological, emotional problems. Finances, what should I do? Should I invest? Should I change my job? Of course, Srila Prabhupada did give advice, especially in the earlier days, in many areas to many devotees. But it's not required, and it shouldn't be of a guru, and it shouldn't be expected of a guru. It's actually ridiculous to expect a guru to be expert in everything. There are specialists in every area. I'm not a carpenter. I don't know how to advise others on carpentry. So if we need some carpentry work done, then we go to a carpenter. It's a simple principle. So don't expect gurus to be able to have some kind of mystic insight that they can advise you on everything. And gurus themselves shouldn't think that by dint of being a spiritual teacher and guide, they're expert on everything. Of course, it is a fact that after years and years of dealing with people, after all, we are dealing, gurus deal with people, we do have insights into human psychology. Well, one of my insights is that it's human psychology is extremely complex, and that even if you listen to people and discuss, and there may be disputes, and you listen to both sides to get an accurate assessment of the situation is very, very difficult. And then even if you do have an actual assessment and you give her the right advice, often people don't follow it. And then even if they follow it, the nature of this world is so complex that situations can change. Well, that's one reason why for difficult situations, traditionally, people go to astrologers. Grihasthas, especially. Of course, in the traditional Varnashram system, life wasn't so complex. There's a lot of propaganda. You don't have so much freedom. But one thing about not having so much freedom is you don't have so much danger either. And with everyone's roles clearly demarcated, there's less room for people to get into difficulty. Everyone has their own particular duty to perform. Life's much easier. It's unnecessarily complex in the modern age. So gurus, yeah, they may be competent to advise in some areas, but on the other hand, is it really what I am expected to do to people tell me all these complex situations in their life and I'm supposed to get involved? And yeah, our basic thing is to encourage devotees to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, study the books, and to speak on Shastra. So not that we have to get involved in people's complex personal matters. And traditionally, in traditional societies, there are fathers, mothers, grandmothers, uncles, aunts, plus the broader society, there are people there who can help you also. That's also not there with all this freedom, because no one looks up, well, it's an overstatement to say you don't look up to others. Have my own life, and then you have your own life and you get into problems, and then there's no one to help you because you didn't reciprocate. You want to be on your own, then you're on your own. And then you go to... Of course, Srila Prabhupada writes that Bhagavad Gita, as it is, that one should go to a problem to solve... one should go to a guru to solve all the problems of life. But the ultimate... That doesn't mean that the guru has to get into the Gordian knot of all your complex problems, but rather cut the Gordian knot. Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam. What is that? Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. That's the Gordian knot, the complex knot of material life. You cut it, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, cut it with the weapon of detachment. So that way the guru should preach. So yes, whatever situation you're in, then tateno kampan su samikshamano, you tolerate and go on. And you may have to make some adjustment for that adjustment, ask an astrologer. That you could do. Of course, you have to get a good astrologer. Don't go to someone who just picked up a book 3 weeks ago and now wants to advise you. So it may be that gurus are qualified to advise in some areas, but it's not simply by dint of their spiritual or institutional role. It's not that just that because you start to initiate that suddenly you become a financial expert or a qualified managerial advisor, all knowing about everything. And it's ridiculous even to think so, but it's maybe even more ridiculous that some disciples seem to expect it of gurus, and some gurus seem to think it about themselves, and that disciples should do whatever they say in all matters without question. And so many times disciples come to me and say, well, I'm confused about this and that, and I'll just do what you say. Whatever you say, I'll do. But should I do this course in the university, or should I give up my studies in the middle, should I reject my parents? And actually, there are much more complex situations than this, but whatever. Should I advise on such things, in all such cases? Better that you discuss with devotees who know you very well, who know your situation. In many cases, devotees will come, they're just impetuous. They just can't, they're not serious to follow, even if you say it. So I get a letter from someone, and then I reply based on what they write, and they write back and say, well, in the meantime, I decided to do something different. After writing you a huge, long letter, asking for advice, take the trouble to consider it, give advice, and then they just change it. And these are the kind of things, that issues that gurus face, which is one reason why many of them are not very keen to get involved with all these kind of things. But there are gurus who just say, okay, you do this, you do that, you do that. Actually, Srila Prabhupada was extraordinarily expert in many areas, but you shouldn't think that every guru is going to be like that or has to be like that. In fact, in some areas, gurus should be ready to take advice from disciples. I do all the time with my disciples. On technical matters, computer matters, travel-related matters, financial matters, dealing with different devotees. How do you think we should, this and that, and so many things. Anyway, as a general principle, sannyasis and gurus should not be seen as being more into management and bureaucracy and organizational matters than studying and teaching, which is what they're principally supposed to be doing. In a previous talk, I read from a message from the GBC to the devotees of ISKCON on Gaur Purnima 1999. I'll read another extract from that. At that time, the GBC gave a message that the Governing Body Commission accepts that in general, sannyasis and gurus should focus their energies on brahminical activities such as the studying and teaching of shastra, the development and teaching of training systems, holding seminars and ministering to individual devotees, and that they should avoid administrative and managerial duties. Okay, the GBC said it. Authorized. Ministering to individual devotees, and I've just been talking about not ministering. No, we do minister to individual devotees, but we don't want to get caught up in devotees' complex psychological mix-ups. Ministering means you advise. You may advise in so many ways, but the main thing is to advise to improve your chanting. The real solution to all problems is to become Krishna conscious. Material life is going to be full of problems. They bring people up to the spiritual platform rather than getting involved in the nitty-gritty of people's personal issues. That may be the to some extent. But the general point is that gurus should be seen as sadhus rather than politicians or bureaucrats or whatever. Otherwise, you can get a situation. There may be gurus with thousands of disciples, but may be seen as being attached to his post, not much interested in going deeply into discussions of Krishna conscious philosophy. They can spend hours discussing managerial issues, but don't put time aside for philosophical issues. I was recently speaking to one of my GBC godbrothers who went from another continent to Mayapur to meet with two of his GBC godbrothers. Oh, actually, one is a retired from the GBC, and they're just putting 1 month aside to discuss Srila Prabhupada's books among themselves. Bliss, great, first. Management will go on, whether we do it or not. Someone will do it. Someone should do it. But we don't want that gurus and leaders should be seen as neophyte devotees who are really more interested in management and they're really into it and they do sadhana or they skip it because they're so busy. Well, that's another disadvantage of management. It tends to suck up all your attention. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada wanted to get out of management. He wanted to focus on book translations, but some leaders today seem to be very attached to management, power, position, area, post. Won't relinquish it until the last breath. Better, as we hear from the message from the GBC, that gurus should, if they're involved in management, retire from it and preach, write, hear and chant all these things. It may be easier said than done, but I'm just giving what I think is best, which seems to be substantiated by that paragraph from the GBC message and from Srila Prabhupada's personal example. So please excuse me if I've made some statements which could be taken as being improper. As I've said in this series of talks, I'm trying to address issues which devotees have expressed to me. It's not the most enlivening subject matter, but some things have to be discussed, or should be discussed. At least some will be benefited by doing so. And I really hope that our movement can develop toward an ethos whereby, as far as possible, brahminical duties and managerial duties, which are more of the kshatriya nature, they are separated as far as possible. If that can be done, that would go a long way to getting past these kind of issues. And again, I'm not against management by any means. It's very much required. I was just speaking to a devotee yesterday who was asking me about one great singer who used to be based at One devotee was very famous for his kirtan, and he's passed away now, that devotee. And I said, well, I have my reservation, even though he's lauded as a great devotee, but I have my reservations because he wrote a book in which he's just blasting everyone who's in management, as if everyone in management is just in it because they want name and fame and power and position, then they should be like him and just do kirtan. But he doesn't realize that he was able to just do kirtan because there are others who are taking the headache of managing. He wouldn't have a nice temple that he could just come and sit and people come around and adulate him. But that requires management to run it on. So I'm not, for that reason I wasn't, although his kirtan's nice, but it's an improper attitude. Management is not easy. And we shouldn't think that managers are wrong because they're managers. Rather, they're taking a great burden. Still, at the same time, as far as possible, if gurus can not be in management posts, not sickly involved, that would be better. Our movement is still young. We have a lot to learn. But that could be a direction that we want to guide the movement in. So again, please excuse me if what I've said may not be very pleasing. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya churnakam padaya nipatya kritva chaka kushatam etad aham bravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat. Gauranga chandra charane kuruta nuraga. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukharona vayang vicharaya. Hari rasa madhira madha. Hare Krishna.